Right now, I want to go to Jerry Kamer, Senior Research Fellow at the Center for Immigration Studies. He's won many awards in his 30 years as a journalist. In 2006, he received the Pulitzer Prize and the George Polk Award for his work in helping undercover the bribery scandal whose central figure was Representative Randy Duke Cunningham. And his work in Mexico for the Arizona Republic was honored with the 1989 Robert F. Kennedy Award for Humanitarian Journalism. And, Jerry, welcome back to the show, sir. How are you?
Good, Chuck. Good to be with you again.
I know you're on a busy schedule, and I appreciate you taking the time out with me today. You've got a heck of a report, and actually it's a four-part series entitled Cheap Labor as Cultural Exchange. Did I get the title right?
That's right, Chuck, yes. It's a series that we published last week on our website, cis.org, at the Center for Immigration Studies. It lays out a program that was actually established by Congress in 1961 as a cultural exchange. It's been administered ever since that time by the U.S. Information Agency, and then when the USIA was absorbed into the State Department, it's been administered by the State Department. And the central point is that while they call this a cultural exchange, what it has happened is it has become a program of cheap labor for employers who want to bring over workers and hire foreign workers instead of American workers. In this case, it's the workers are college kids from around the world who come over for 4 to 5 months to work in low-wage jobs and then have a chance to travel. The idea is that they'll get to know our American way of life and go back home and
when they will. Go back home, spread the goodwill. America's great, and I'm really glad to be back home, but it doesn't always work out that way.
Well, you know, it's a good idea in principle, and I think many of the kids do leave with a favorable impression of the U.S., although many of your listeners probably first heard about the program last summer when a protest of some of these young workers got national and international attention. They were claiming that working for the Hershey Chocolate Company at their distribution center just outside the town of Hershey, they were being mistreated and overworked and underpaid, and that put a bright light on some of the problems that this program has had over the years.
You say, and I go to part four, that this program has created visa mills, and there wasn't the proper oversight. And does this fall under the J Visa program? Is that right?
That's right, Chuck. It's a part of the J Visa Cultural Exchange Program. And these problems have been pointed out for years, not just by people like me, but the Government Accountability Office, the State Department's own Inspector General, have pointed out abuses in this program, basically claiming that the State Department has been unable to conduct proper oversight of the private sector sponsors, that each of these young foreign workers has to have a sponsor. And indeed, they pay the sponsors an average of $1,100 for the privilege of getting a J-1 visa and coming over and working in our country. So when you multiply that by over 100,000 kids, and that's how many come over seasonally every year, you multiply that $1,100 and you have $110 million in funds that are generated for these sponsors. And these sponsors have become a powerful lobby in Washington, lobbying to expand the program. And we point out that this program has a virtually unlimited capacity to grow, and the State Department has been trying to grow it in countries like India and China and Brazil, where there are literally tens of millions of young people who would like to come work in the U.S. for a few months, improve their English, improve their resumes, and make some money. And if you're from a country like Romania, Bulgaria, Moldova in Eastern Europe, where many of these young people come from, if you can make minimum wage in the U.S., you're doing pretty well. But we also point out that many of these young people are displacing from the workplace young Americans at a time when our country is going through obviously a major recession, and when we have record levels of unemployment amongst our own young people.
Tell me about this Baltimore Sun story, 2002. the students that were stranded, left stranded on the streets?
Right, that was a group of young Poles who came over with J-1 visas, and they were promised jobs that did not exist. One of the problems with this program is that there has been fraud. The American-based sponsors work with foreign-based recruiters, and these foreign-based recruiters have an incentive of signing up as many young people as they can, and in some instances, they signed them up for jobs that did not exist. And so the young people came over here expecting to be able to get a job, see the country, work, pay back the loans that they frequently take out to be a part of the program, and they were stuck high and dry. And this became a localized scandal, but nothing nearly as big as the scandal involving the workers at Hershey, Pennsylvania last summer.
Now, this is the one that kind of makes me wonder about this whole program, because you're talking about this J-1 workers, that a lot of these people are getting these J-1 visas to work at strip clubs, things like that?
Well, yeah, I wouldn't say a lot, Chuck, but that is one of the problems. Yeah, some of these sponsors were working with recruiters overseas who are actually lining up these young people to work in strip clubs and other adult and entertainment type jobs. It was a small but obviously a scandalous incident, and a somewhat larger. And
I mean,
even
but
more
doesn't that kind of wave a flag? Like, wait a minute, why do you need students from another country to come over here and work at the strip clubs? Wouldn't that be a red flag? Or
well, you certainly think. You'd like to think that the U.S. sponsors would see that red flag waving and would not. They're supposed to vet these kids. They're supposed to make sure that the kids are eligible and that the jobs are legitimate. But some of the sponsors they've become visa mills. They want to bring these kids in because they want to get the fees from these young people. They're not interested in providing quality of service. They're interested in getting the fees that these young people pay for the privilege of getting a J-1 visa.
Boy, Jerry, with all the investigative reporting you do and stories like this, doesn't it frustrate you to see how we keep kicking ourselves in the rear end when there are so many Americans out of work? And it's like, why in the world do we do this to ourselves?
Right. Well, and that's one of the central points of this series. Again, I'd like to just point out it's at our website, cis.org. We talk with a number of people, parents and workers, young Americans who say, look, we've been displaced. I talk with a woman who is a former State Department Foreign Service officer who believes in cultural exchanges, says they have an important value of showing the world what kind of country we have. But her own son up in coastal Maine, little town of Camden, Maine, lost his job working as a dishwasher in a restaurant, a high school kid, because the J-1 visa kids came in and took those jobs. I talked with other American workers in Martha's Vineyard and in the resort areas of Ocean City, Maryland. Learned from the work of a columnist down in Virginia Beach, Virginia, pointing out these problems. This is a significant issue, and we wanted to point out that the sponsors of this program are trying to take this program around the world and to grow the program. The State Department was trying to grow the program right up until the time in November last month when they decided to put a temporary freeze on the number of young people that are coming over. But clearly this is a program that has the potential to go from the peak of 150,000 that it reached a couple of years ago to well over a million. We could have a million young people from around the world coming over and working in jobs that young Americans need to have. And I interviewed the mayor of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, which is right next to Hershey, Pennsylvania, and he said it makes no sense for our government to be saying time after time that issue number one is jobs, 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 and then to have a program that basically provides American jobs, but for foreign workers. It doesn't make sense, especially at a time of recession that we're in now.
Hey, we're going to get to more of this story, and I got a caller that'd like to ask you a question real quick, so let's get him in before the break. Al, you're on with Jerry. Come on in real quick.
How you doing, Chuck? I was wondering,
we've had Muslim exchange students come over here, and they went home with a negative view of the United States. Witness that the 9/11 hijackers were all English-speaking, Western educated, and that cultural exchange didn't come off too well. I'm wondering if this thing about employment, anything we do with our infrastructure, ecological or otherwise, or jobs, anytime we try to do something to benefit our own people in terms of sovereignty, immediately gets hit from both sides as being xenophobic. And I'm wondering if that's the battle tactic. You know, both the right and the left seem to chime in, well, you're xenophobic, rather than the norm of national sovereignty. Like, we're not a country, we're an employment agency. And I was wondering if he'd seen this common thread through these arguments. When anytime we try to do something on behalf of our national self-interest, this ludicrous term pops up.
Chuck, do you want me to talk to that?
Yeah, that's for your guest, Chuck.
I think that's a very good question. It certainly is true when we talk about workers who come into the country illegally. When those of us who express concern about the growth of the illegal immigrant population are frequently smeared with that tag, it's a way to avoid discussing the substance of the issue, the fact that the increase of illegal immigrant workers.
It's kind of like holding up a Dracula's cape.
Right. But I have not encountered that in this case. It may be because we're talking about a smaller population. As I say, the peak of the J-1 workers here in the summer, it's called the Summer Work Travel Program by the State Department. It's part of the J-1 Cultural Exchange Program. The peak was 152,000, and this year it's down to about 103,000 because of the recession and a couple of other things. But I haven't encountered that, but I wouldn't be surprised as this story gets out and as more people become aware of what is happening that tactic is employed, but it hasn't happened yet.
Well, the final point for me is that I notice any time we try to do anything with water, with infrastructure, with you name anything that makes up the country, that immediately comes out, and again, it's from both sides of the spectrum, left and right, well, you're exclusionary, you're xenophobic, rather than nationhood, which is normal. Sovereignty is what makes a nation. Somehow it's bad, even though we've been most generous. That's the screwy part about this.
Yeah, well, I think that is a screwy part of it. The screwiest part of this program is that our government actually provides incentives for employers to avoid hiring American kids and to hire the foreign kids. And these incentives are in the form of tax breaks. If you hire an American kid, you pay your share of Social Security, you pay federal unemployment, and you pay Medicare. You hire a J-1 kid, you pay none of those things. So automatically, you've got an 8% premium. And some of the recruiters for this program and the sponsors, they actually put up on their websites, and we have lots of these websites. We have URLs to these websites posted in our series. Again, cis.org right. is where people can find the series.
And, Jerry, we got to take a break. And
thank you.
Thank you, Al. We're going to give them title of this four-part series, each series, so you can look it up at cis.org. Excellent report from Jerry Kamer, Senior Research Fellow at the Center for Immigration Studies. We're going to be right back.
This is a special alert to all Americans who own a vehicle with less than 120,000 miles with an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all. Due to a decline in the economy and major car companies filing for bankruptcy, Cover America Auto Care has announced revolutionary, inexpensive mechanical breakdown coverage that is now available to the general public to save consumers thousands on auto repairs. An open phone line has been established for drivers to call who own a vehicle that is less than 10 years old for a free 5-minute quote and to see if you qualify. The number is 800-216-8211. Drivers who are covered with this auto protection will not have to pay for a covered repair again. This is the auto coverage now sweeping across America at a fraction of what dealerships charge and is now available to the public by calling today. The number to call is 800-216-8211. 800-216-8211. That's 800-216-8211.
Hi, I'm Dr. Carol Scott. Join us for Stress Relief Radio, Sundays, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. Stress is inevitable. It's a part of our lives. However, stress does not just happen. It's a process. Each show is theme-based and based on medical evidence. On Stress Relief Radio, we'll help you. We'll discuss innovative ways to reduce stress. We welcome your calls, your questions, your emails. That's Stress Relief Radio, every Sunday, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, right here on CRN Digital Talk.
Attention, kids. Cable listeners in Southern California, are you planning your holiday party or your office party? Angelo's and Vinci's Restaurante in Fullerton, California offers free banquet facilities with a festive, theatrical, highly decorative Italian atmosphere. It makes any event a celebration. There's a variety of menus and options available, and Angelo and Vinci's can tailor your event to meet your needs and suit most any budget. Delicious buffets, fully stocked bars, DJs dancing, and much more. There's always a reason to celebrate. So if you're planning your office, holiday party, a family gathering, a birthday, anniversary, awards dinner, wedding reception, or a rehearsal dinner, come to Angelo's and Vinci's Restaurante in downtown Fullerton, California, since 1971. The greatest. Visit our website at www.angeloandvinci's.com. Like us on Facebook or call today, 714-879-4022. 714-879-4022. That's 714-879-4022. And don't forget to visit the monsters in the wine cellar.
CRN wants your vote. We proudly announce that CRN's program, Slow Living Radio, has been nominated in the Viewer's Choice category for the annual Taste Awards, honoring food, wine, and lifestyle programming in TV, radio, online, and film. The deadline to vote is December 8th. To vote today, go to the homepage of Slow Living Radio at slowlivingradio.com, click on the Taste Awards nomination, and select Slow Living Radio in Category 4, Best Food or Drink Radio Broadcast. Many thanks from CRN and Slow Living Radio for your vote.
Everybody's talking at me.
My guest, Jerry Kamer, fellow research at Center for Immigration Studies, talking about his four-part series, Cheap Labor as Culture Exchange. And part one was the globalization of the summer job. Part two, young Americans don't know how the system works. Part three is SWT, that's the summer work, what is that?
Travel.
Travel?
Summer work travel program,
yes. In Alaska, fish sliming as a culture exchange. And part four, a cavalier attitude. And then they've got an epilogue, an open letter to the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, who runs the program. Hey, Jerry, let's try to get another call in here. They love to talk to you. Come on in here, Carl. You got about 3 minutes.
Hi, Jerry. I saw in your articles a reference to Senator Udall from Colorado. His criticizing of the J-1 program in the resort industries in Colorado, the ski industry especially is a major utilizer of the J-1. They also use a lot of illegal labor. And I wonder if you're familiar with a book by Hal Clifford called Downhill Slide. And in it, he's very critical of the big corporate ski areas using cheap labor tactics instead of hiring Americans. And he's talked about how over a 30-year period it has led to a decline in the actual both total numbers and percentage of Americans who ski, and it's a self-defeating policy because a lot of young people who would work, you know, start out in college as a dishwasher or making beds at a ski resort, then next year they might learn to become a, you know, better skier, maybe a ski instructor. They go back and teach skiing at the local ski hill in Wisconsin or Iowa. This has been an incredibly short-sighted policy that has shot the ski industry in the foot. And people who knowledge about it are very, very critical of it.
Yes, you raise a very good point. I think Senator Udall wrote a letter to Secretary Clinton at the State Department expressing concerns about the displacement of American workers, and we take a look at that in our series and also look at the reply letter that the State Department wrote back to Senator Udall, assuring him that the State Department carefully monitors the program to make sure that there are no negative effects for American workers. And we point out and document that this is nonsense. The State Department does not monitor this, has very poor data gathering on this program, and has stricken the one regulation that suggested that that employers and that sponsors of these kids not bring young people over to work in areas of where lots of Americans are unemployed.
We have heard from American workers at the ski resorts who are upset about the program because there is no cap, no numerical cap. The program can bring in workers from around the world, and I misspoke a moment ago. For the first time a month ago, the State Department has imposed a temporary cap. But until that time, there were no numerical limits, and employers want a reliable source of cheap labor. This program offered not only a reliable source of cheap labor, but to be in this program, you have to be a college student. And so these young people are intelligent, they're hardworking, they're well motivated, they interact well with the client base. They're good workers, and we have, I think, want to make clear, nothing against these young people who come to our country. What we're criticizing is that our own government provides incentives for employers to hire these kids at a time when American kids are looking for a job and have record levels of unemployment. That's our primary issue.
And, Carl, thank you very much for
Thanks,
the call.
Jerry.
And
Thanks,
appreciate it. Thank you. Hey, and Jerry, as you mentioned in part four here, no transparency at all, and you touched on that. They're just not answering questions. They don't want to tell you anything. The most open administration in the history of the world.
Well, but I'd like to point out, Chuck, that this is not a Democrat-Republican thing. The State Department was building this program during the previous Bush administration, President George W. Bush, and it continued under has continued under President Obama.
Did you say it started in 61?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah,
The real growth came, Chuck, in the past decade. This program had about 20,000 young people coming over to work with J-1 visas in the summer work travel program in 1996. And as I said, the peak was reached in 2008 when it was 152, almost 153,000 young people were coming over. And again,
all out of time. I am so sorry, and we could have spent an hour on this. Jerry Kamer, Senior Research Fellow, Center for Immigration Studies. Go there, read the entire report, the four-part series, It's Cheap Labor as Culture Exchange.